Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got to know.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
And welcome to the Harrah's World Series of Poker Poker Room here in St. Louis. I am Paul Harrah's, along with Dennis Phillips and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Coming up on the show today, Matt Savage, who is not a professional poker player, but a professional poker tournament director, head of the Tournament Directors Association. He's got a huge event coming up in Los Angeles that Dennis played in last week called the LA Poker Classic. That starts in just a couple of days and is one of the biggest events outside of Las Vegas all year long. So he'll be joining us in a few minutes. I'll also get to some email and, of course, Joe with his poker coach segment. But first, Dennis, welcome back home after a couple of weeks. You've been on the road again.
I have been, yes. I went straight from the – well, I take that. I did not go straight from the Bahamas to Vegas. I spent 9 hours in St. Louis.
just enough time to do some laundry and repack.
That's pretty much it. Open suitcase, dump out, repack, and leave.
Yeah.
That was it. Went out there to the Heartland Tour finale. The kickoff for Season 6. This is the first time they've really done this major of a kickoff. They flew in people with private jets from five locations out there to this. They absolutely flooded the Red Rock Casino out there. They were trying to get 300 people for it, 150 for each of two opening day segments on that. They sold out, each of them, at 200 and had alternates waiting in line trying to get into the tournament.
Nice.
On this thing. Yeah, it was pretty awesome on that thing. A lot of good communication, a lot of good new friends out there. Something's going on. You go to the Heartland Tour and check it out. They've all through the Midwest now. A lot of different events in that. They also had a charity one out there, which is for the DAV, which is Disabled Veterans out there. And there were a number of the disabled veterans on it. I was privileged enough to meet with several of them and talk with them.
Very nice.
Some heck of a guys.
Other celebrities playing? I understand
there
that
was.
You actually sat at the same table with our friend Tiffany Michelle.
That was in the main event. Yes, I did.
Oh, that was the main event?
That was the main event.
Oh.
That was not the celebrity. No, that was the main event.
Okay. Did you take all her chips?
I did not take it. I couldn't get in a hand with her.
Really?
I begged, I pleaded, the whole bit like that.
What do you mean?
It never worked.
Are you implying that Tiffany's afraid of playing a pot with you?
Well, I think she looked around the table and decided that she could find chips elsewhere a little easier. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
No. So the only hand we ever played, frankly, I didn't catch anything. I think I called her with a 6-7 of clubs on it, and nothing came on the board. She had a king-jack, and a jack hit the flop, and she still checked to me and all the way to the river. And
she checked top pair all the way down?
All the way to the river.
Yeah, she doesn't want to put chips in there against you. I think that's the conclusion I'm coming to, ladies and gentlemen. But the charity event was a celebrity thing?
Yes.
Any names we would know?
Absolutely there was. A number of people here. Antonio.
Esfandiaro.
Esfandiaro was there. Lou Diamond Phillips there again. I played with him in the main event last year. Great guy. Sat there and talked about some of the movies he's done, some of the other things that way on it. Just a ton of different celebrities that were there. We had a heck of a lot of fun. Mike Ice from St. Louis was there.
Oh, yeah.
He made the final table the same as I did.
Yeah, Mike, who won a bracelet last summer in a $1,500 event at the World Series of Poker.
Yeah. Kathy Lieberman was also there.
Mm-hmm.
She is the winningest woman player ever in tournaments, over $6 million in it.
Although our friend Vanessa Russo is catching up.
This is true.
Vanessa just won the ladies event at the PCA in the Bahamas and had a fantastic 2009.
Absolutely.
I think since, Vanessa is still a very young woman, she's got a chance at making that run. The same way people talk about Phil Ivey making a run at Phil Hellmuth and Johnny Chan and Doyle Brunson at the top of the bracelet board.
Yep.
I'm not saying that Vanessa Russo is a Phil Ivey type, but because of her age, I think she's got a pretty good chance of catching and passing any of these other women.
Oh, I absolutely think so. I've played with her. She's a tremendous player.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Not to take anything away from Kathy, of course, but there's getting to be more and more women players of a higher caliber. I'm telling you, you sit down, beware.
Yeah.
These gals can play.
Absolutely right. All right, I want to hear about a hand or two that you played at the Heartland event. But first, let's say hello to Joe McGowan. What do you got coming up in the Poker Coach segment today, Joe?
We're going to talk about flopping a huge hand and having to let it go.
Oh, okay. Advice on not getting too buried with a big hand. All right, terrific. I want you, Joe, to add some analysis to one of these hands that that Dennis played. Do you want to talk about the charity tournament one or the main event one?
We can talk about either one of them. The charity one was fun because it was a rebuy tournament, and I had some fun. I think I went all in blind the first three hands to it. The first hand I had, the master hand, the hand that Joe always tells me to play, the deuce seven on it, and I caught a deuce, took a guy out in the first hand. He was not a very happy camper, so I bought him back in.
And did you have the seven deuce prop going so everybody at the table had to pay you?
I tried, but it was after the fact, and they wouldn't pay me off. I couldn't believe it.
No, you do have to set up a prop bet ahead of time.
Oh, darn.
Yeah.
I knew I was missing something there
on
it. But anyway, we had a lot of fun that way. A lot of really good guys there. Raised, I think, about $25,000 for the DAV. It's just, you know, flat out an excellent deal. I do have one hand I want to talk to you about because
okay.
I saw this, and this is a probability bet. Joe, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, and I'd love to have your feedback for it. Played, we were on level 8, so we started with 15,000, lost about half the players. I was at around 27,000, just a hair below average. This is in the main event on it. Gentleman to my right had started out the hand with about 18,000, just a little under it. He was small blind, I was big blind on it. So he had a $300 small blind bet. I had $600 for the big bet. There was a $100 ante out there.
Mm-hmm.
So you got all of a whopping $1,500 in the pot out there. Folds all the way around to the guy in the small blind. Now he has $17,000 left in front of him.
Yep.
All righty. Level 8. He's below average, but, you know, still sitting pretty dang solid on that. He shoved.
Shoved all $17,000.
All $17,000. Here it is, money in the pot.
Uh-huh. Slight overbet.
You think?
Yeah.
Alrighty. I look down at a king of clubs and a queen of clubs.
Okay.
Which is, you know, beats nothing right now, hardly. Except probably his hand. And do you like that, Joe?
Yeah.
I thought about it for a minute, and I said, screw it. I don't, you know, I don't care what he's got. This is just a horrible bet. He's not going to do this with aces, kings, queens, anything, any kind of premium hand whatsoever.
What did you put him on?
I figured the best thing he had was some tiny pair. The best he
deuces,
had.
Deuces, threes, fours.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
And at this stage, a race puts me over 40,000, puts me over it. If not, leaves me with a little over 10. Not a good position or anything like that. May or may not have been the best call. I'd love to hear Joe's response to it, but I called him on it.
Okay. Joe, what do you think of the call?
Well, I mean, there are two sides to it where I think a lot of players, their rule of thumb is that, you know, if they feel they have the best hand, they're going to make the call. And, you know, other players will feel that this guy could be doing this with seven jack offsuit, and I have king,
oh,
queen.
You
but
give him too much credit.
I got to fade, you know, the sevens and the jacks, and the guy can get lucky, and it's not that great of a spot. I'm not a tremendous
right.
favorite. I'm not a big enough favorite because this is close to my tournament life. You know, and it'll really, you know, hurt me if I lose this pot, so I'll wait for a better spot because I could be beat. But, you know, Dennis's read was right on. So, you know, those are the two sides. And Dennis knows me. I probably might get pushed around a little bit. I probably would have had to let it go. But, you know, Dennis does better than I do in tournaments. So, you know, the play might be correct call. That's just a little bit of my feel.
I think I'm in Joe's camp here. I've only got 600 invested. Yeah, I've got 28,000. Is that what you said you had in front
of
you?
Yeah.
You got to put 17,000 on the line here. Who knows what you're going to run into, including bad luck?
Yeah.
That, you know, I mean, that's always, you know, king,
yeah,
queen.
Yeah, you got to
fade those,
whatever garbage he has if you're correct.
Absolutely.
But, like I said, there's another side to it where a lot of people, they don't want to be pushed around, and they know they have the best hand. They make the call. And that might be a way to accumulate chips and play well and play good tournament poker. You know.
But before you tell us what happened, in the hand, I think king queen is one of those hands that people look down at and get a little bit more excited than they really should. It's kind of like ace jack, which we've talked about so many times on this show as a major trouble hand for a lot of players. If I look down at that king queen, at first I'd go, "Ooh, that's pretty good," and then I go, "Well, wait a second. Even if he only has two undercards,
King-Queen is exactly the same as Ace-King. I'm going to have to fade whatever cards this guy's got, and I'm going to have to worry about that, and I could be behind to any pair. So
I call those hands pretty hands.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty but deadly. Yeah. So I agree with you 100%, and frankly, if this was like a main event at the WSOP or whatever, I'd muck them and all. But at this stage, through eight levels, I've got this young guy here who's, you know, and I didn't set this up, my apologies, a little bit aggressive, you know, and I just knew up and down this was, he was doing an ATC, any two cards, made no difference what it was, they folded to him, he's all in, makes no difference,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
And I was wrong, he did have a good hand, he had the 9-6 offsuit. So what the heck was I thinking? Good grief. How could I possibly have thought he would?
Yeah.
So, flopped a queen.
Okay.
Flopped a six. River to six.
Oh.
I paid him off. And guess what? He still went out of the tournament ahead of me.
Is that right?
Shocker.
Yeah. So,
no, Joe actually makes a valid point there, and in a more serious tournament, in a, like the main event or something, I probably would have mucked those, would have hated it. But I probably would have. In this stage, though, and with this player, he's a good guy. Don't get me wrong. But, yeah, I was calling.
And you ended up taking a bad beat. I mean,
yeah.
That's all that is. Oh, speaking of bad beats, while you were out of town here, did you hear about the bad beat that got hit right here at Harris, St. Louis?
I have not.
You know that the bad beat jackpot has been up and up and up and up and up for months?
Yeah.
Saturday night, it was at $425,310 when it got hit.
Wow.
Quad fives beating quad deuces. Now, you know, the guy who was quad deuces, a guy named Frank, who I'm sure you know, you've seen him around, very good guy, local, who plays here a lot. In fact, I saw him here Sunday night when I came in to play PLO. He was here and still wearing the exact same hat he always wears. You know, that $213,000 he had just won didn't change Frank one iota. He's still the same guy. But listen to this. It was his first hand at the table.
He just sat down?
He had just sat down at the table and got dealt a pair of deuces. This is in a 1-2 no-limit game.
Yeah.
The flop comes five, deuce, deuce. He's up, heads up against the woman. She's got fives.
Yeah.
There's a six on the turn, five on the river. Bad beat. Half the jackpot to him, a quarter of the jackpot to her, a quarter of the jackpot to the rest of the table. But you want to talk about the really bad beat? There was another player here who was on the list for that game. His name was at the top of the list. When the seat opened up, they called him, and he was on the phone, and he said, "Give it to somebody else. I'll take the next seat." And Frank got the seat, sat down, and won $213,000.
Oh, my goodness.
There is your bad beat story, as far as I'm concerned.
Wow.
By the way, the backup jackpot here at Harris is up now on the board. I'm looking at it, $261,360. So there's a over a quarter of $1 million in the backup jackpot here. And speaking of bad beat jackpots, while everybody here was thrilled to see 400 and change up on this board, how about the $1 million-plus bad beat that got hit at Caesars Atlantic City also this weekend? A guy named Steve Gedney had his quad fours beat by quad aces. The guy rivered the fourth ace. Steve took down the largest bad beat jackpot in history, $554,000 for losing the hand.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So
I just have this image.
The
you got to answer around the room going.
Yeah. That's the biggest bad beat payout in history, $553,000. Unless you consider somebody who came in second in a World Series of Poker or ended up taking a bad beat. You know, I think Dennis's bad beat this year going out 45th in the World Series, you know, may have cost him some money. I don't know if it would have been $500,000 in the end. But here at Harris, they're building it back up again. And I don't know what happened to the guy who didn't take the seat. I don't know if he ended up playing that night or not, but I'm sure he banged his head against the wall for a while or cursed at the person who had called him because he was stuck on the phone.
I just have this image of the guy that lost the hand. Yes, I lost the hand. He's dancing around the table, you know, kicking up his heels. Yeah, that would be interesting. Somebody walks in the table and has no idea what's going on, doesn't realize he hit the bad beat.
Yeah.
What's this idiot doing?
Well, it's not just him. It's everybody at the table.
This is true.
Because the people who didn't
win
that.
Oh, yeah, where's the share?
Well, let's see.
It'd be a quarter, so it'd be 107,000 divided if there were seven other people on that, 15,000 apiece.
Or eight,
that's
eight,
not bad.
Or eight other people in there, so
or
everybody's
eight,
taking
sorry,
down,
eight of them.
You know, 13, 14,000.
Yeah.
Whatever that comes to.
Woo!
Yeah, just for being at the table. for a table share. That's pretty good.
That would not be bad.
How many tables do they have over there, guys?
21. And on Saturday night, every single table was full. Yeah. Absolutely. The place has been full. And in fact, there's a big crowd in here today as well.
It should be.
Yeah.
Packed.
Yep. Harrah's doing very, very well. So congratulations to Frank. Nice to have a local guy win that. Some of that money will come back into the poker economy, although some people who know him know that the one thing Frank will not do is put all of that money back into the poker economy. But to his credit, he's going to take care of some people in his family who have some needs, and that's good. Now, one other thing I want to talk about here at the top is an incident online recently. We've talked about this kid, Isildur 1.
Yes.
I call him a kid, even though we don't know who he is. We think he's this 19-year-old kid from Scandinavia who has been getting into these huge pots, especially towards the end of the year. He was playing online against Dwan, against Patrick Antonius, against Phil Ivey, against Zygmunt, and others. And he was playing recently in one of these huge heads-up matches, I think four tabling one night, PLO. And the Railbird number, people who were on that site watching him play, was over 200,000 people.
That this is unbelievable almost. They were playing. He is involved, I believe somebody said, in the 12 biggest hands ever played online.
I believe it.
He's in all 12 of them on this. And literally, when he would get on there, word would be passed through the poker community, and everybody was signing on to watch it because every hand was six figures on this thing.
Now, have you ever watched anybody else play online? I know people come and watch you online sometimes because you tell me that Railbirds write you notes in the chat box there, and you get a lot of that.
Yep.
Have you ever watched anybody else play?
I really haven't. Done a couple of table hosting where I do some talking and to the different players and make a final table, some things like that I've done on it. But for actually just going on, finding a person and sitting and watching him, no.
Joe, have you done that?
Well, I'm a little embarrassed right now because I'm sitting here. I did watch a little bit of it. I thought it was like me and maybe 25 other people or something. I had no idea so many people watched it. You know, that's incredible. I mean, unreal. 200,000 people to watch
that. Do you think poker is growing?
Yeah, I heard about it, and I wanted to peek on there and just watch a little bit of it. Yeah, I watched it. I thought it was kind of cool.
Now, here's my question for both of you. Is this good for the online poker sites to have all those people playing? I can't imagine that they're just watching. They must also be playing, right? I mean, is 200,000 people logging on and watching any player a revenue generator in any way?
Well, I don't know. I can't answer that. I would think that there would be a certain percentage that would stay on after the game on play. There'd be some of that would all be watching it as they're playing a different time.
Yeah.
So I would think it would be a positive for it. But, you know, also the people that are sitting there watching everything, they can't play multiple tables, they can't do a lot of the other. I don't know. But I think overall it raises some of the interest in poker. It is newsworthy, and as I say, there is no such thing as bad news. So, you know, for poker as a whole, this was probably a positive if you look at it realistically.
So, I'd say 100% a positive. Yeah, you watch football or Ultimate Fighting or something. You can't go do that for most people. I can't go play pro football, but you know, you watch the poker and it's so exciting and such big hands. You know, there are people that will practice and play on PokerStars and become great players, and anybody can play. And I definitely think it's good for poker that so many people are that interested to be able to watch, and everyone would like to be in that spot, you know, on the winning end anyway. So I think it's great.
I'll tell you what I think it's really good for. Pot Limit Omaha, which has become, in the last year or two, the game that more and more people are interested in playing. We've got a PLO game here in St. Louis that's now going five nights a week, and at least one of those nights there's quite a bit of cash being put on the table. People are learning the game. I understand that it is really more of a Midwest phenomenon. People on the East and West Coast might play a little bit of it, but you travel from here to Tunica or Biloxi or Louisville or Tulsa or up to Hammond outside of Chicago and all these places that I've been to, and there's always a PLO game going on, and quite often pretty big PLO games going on, whereas you don't see that. Joe, in your local casino in California, is there a regular PLO game of any kind?
There is a regular game. It's a smaller game, but there is a regular game and a regular group of people that play. they're going to have a PLO tournament out at my local casino coming up in a couple months. I don't play. I tried it, you know, for fun. I want to try to learn the other games. It's kind of crazy. I don't know the other games because they are starting to catch on a little bit. And a lot of people feel, you know, No Limit's getting really tough. A lot of players, you know, are getting really, really good at No Limit. So people are trying other games to hopefully be a little bit softer. So, you know, I'm probably in that group of wanting to learn all the other games, and it does seem like a really good game from what I see so far.
Well, it's growing, and it's growing everywhere. It's probably the second most populous game right now on it. Actually, while I was out there at the Red Rock playing, I got in a mixed game out there where we played the Deucey, Deuce of Seven Triple Draw, Chinese, and eight or better mm-hmm. on it. And
you're
it was
kidding
fun.
Me.
No,
you
why not?
You guys played Chinese at Red Rock?
Yeah, 100, 200 on it.
Level. Wow, I can't believe that.
Yeah, they set up a private table back there. Captain Tom set it up. D. Tellis was back there. Ming was back there. A couple of guys I didn't know, and we had some fun. You know,
yeah.
Till my Deuce to Seven.
I played a home game with him once.
Yeah.
Here's what this tells me. Dennis has been drinking again.
No. I guarantee I had at least three coffees.
All right, we got a break here because we're going to have Matt Savage join us in just a moment here. But we do have some big news about Dennis and television. We told you last fall that he went and played on High Stakes Poker, which will air in March. He also played on Poker After Dark, which will air in March. And when we know the exact dates and can lock those down for
yep.
you, we'll certainly be promoting those as we get closer to them. But you got an interesting email just today from?
From a gentleman out there who is the president of Poker Productions, the guy that runs the High Stakes, the guy that runs the Poker After Dark.
Maury Escondani.
Yep. Maury sent me a nice little email on there, and he invited me out to Caesar's Palace the first week of March. Asked if I want to bring about 20,000 with me, but, you know, see if I want to join you out there and play with a few other guys
mm-hmm.
on the NBC Heads Up.
Wow.
Hey, Joe, guess what? I just got invited
awesome.
To NBC Heads Up.
That's incredible. You know, that's one of the hardest ones to get into. That's one of the toughest things to get into, in my opinion, of all of poker.
That's a field that's limited to only 64 players, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Wow, that's great, Dennis. Congratulations.
Off the top of the head, who's the one player you don't want to see across the table from you?
On round one?
Yeah.
Chris Ferguson. Chris, I hope he shows up late that day. He can pull a Phil Hellmuth with me.
Jesus has owned the Heads Up Championship.
Yes, he has.
Yeah.
He is known among all the pros as one of the toughest by far on it.
All right, so the other side of that coin is, who do you want to see across the table?
Joe, what are you doing the first week of March?
Are you going to pick me or Paul?
All right. We don't know when that will air, but the bad news is that was the weekend we were going to do the poker clinic.
Yeah.
We were going to have it on March 6th here at Harrah's St. Louis, and now we're going to have to find a new date for that amidst all of our busy schedules. So we'll postpone that and have details on that on a future date while Dennis is out there playing in the NBC Heads Up. We've got to take a break. When we come back, tournament director Matt Savage will join us. He's one of the best in the country. And we're going to also get to some listener email, and Joe's got his poker coach segment on letting go of a big hand. All ahead here as the final table continues from Harrah's St. Louis. Remember, you can download podcasts of the show by going to Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. And if you've got a hand you want us to analyze or any questions, you can email them to dennisphillipspoker@gmail.com. This is 5-9 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
Dennis Phillips has flown over 100,000 miles this year to play poker tournaments on three continents. But he always comes back to St. Louis to talk about the game. Here he is at the final table with Paul Harrah's from Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Dennis Phillips here with Paul Harrah's. We're back here at the Harrah's Casino and Hotel, bringing you the final table. This section of it brought to you by Reactor Watches. That's the watch that I always watch, wear, folks. Tell you, I'm staring at it right now. I was out there at the Heartland, and I think I took this off my wrist at least six times to show people while I was out there at it. And it was kind of neat because D. Tellis was one of the players. He's a multimillionaire from Texas, and we were comparing watches, and he liked mine better.
Really?
So I kind of got a kick out of that.
But it's important to say that these watches are not just for multimillionaires like you and D. Tillis.
No, I'm sorry. That is absolutely right. I'm telling you what, they've got the Helium, they've got the Triton, they've got a whole different variety of them. The most durable watch you'll ever buy. They're definitely affordable. They're definitely in a different price range for everybody. It's a heck of a watch, guys. It's a sports watch that you will never, ever destroy. You can just have fun with it, and it's a great watch to look at. So anyhow, back here at the final table, and I believe we're going to be joined now by Matt Savage.
Yeah, Matt is the tournament director for the Commerce Casino in California, which is about to have one of the major events of the year, I think, outside of the World Series of Poker and the PCA. This is one of the biggest tournaments in North America. It's called the L.A. Poker Classic. And, Matt, welcome to the final table.
Hey, nice to be here.
Hey, how's it going, Matt?
It's going good. Hey, Dennis.
All right.
Tell us a little bit about what you guys have planned over the course of 6 weeks, starting this Thursday.
Actually, starts tomorrow. It starts tomorrow at 1 o'clock. The opening event is a $1 million guarantee with a $335 buy-in. So basically, we're taking an online tournament and bringing it to a live poker room. Expect to have over 4,000 players in our first event. And we have a series of events, 51 events over 43 days.
Holy cow.
4,000 people? Can the Commerce hold 4,000 people, or do you have to do a couple of days, or how does that work?
Yeah, we actually have a four-day start. So, some people think we'll get as many as 5,000, but it's a day 1A, B, C, and D, and then the finals will come back on Sunday and play down to one player. So it's a $300 tournament for a $1 million prize pool. Pretty excited.
And you're building up to what is the main event at the beginning of March?
We actually have three $10,000 events in February, a $10,000 horse event, a $10,000 heads-up championship, and then the main event is the WPT tournament that happens on the 26th of February. Mixed in there, we also have the WPT Invitational that obviously Dennis is hopefully he'll make it out for. It's a $200,000 free roll that's going on, and a $25,000 high roller as well. So got a little bit of... everything for any player that can come off.
I wanted to ask you about tournament structure, Matt, because at the PCA that Dennis was just at, he didn't play in the high roller down there, but they had several hundred people who did. And one thing that they did was they gave everybody 50,000 in chips to start with, but instead of wasting time with a 25-50 first level or a 50-100 first level, they started at the 150-300 level, and they stayed there for 4 hours. Before then moving up and adding in antes and playing one-hour rounds after that. Have you done anything like that, and what do you think of a structure like that?
Well, basically, that's kind of how my tournaments are. And if you've played any of my events, you know that what I like to do is start a little bit higher. I'm not really a big fan of the deep stack tournaments because I don't think that that's the best way to do it for the players. And the players that make it deeper in the tournament and mid to late in the tournaments, you have more play. I think that's a little bit about what they did with that high roller event. Daniel basically helped them out with that, and Daniel and I have a lot of the same theory when it comes to structure. So I'm really trying to get people to understand how deep stack tournaments aren't exactly the way to do it, and that's definitely another way to do it that I probably will try in the near future.
Now, I got a couple of questions for you here, Matt. First of all, I'm always in amazement. I go to these tournaments, and you're talking about 4,000 people playing the same event out there. The organization has to be phenomenal, and yet you are always smiling. How the heck do you do this? There has to be unbelievable pressure and headaches and everything else behind it. I mean, how do you run a tournament? How do you get this thing started? Good grief.
Well, basically, for this event, they really gave me a lot of latitude with the scheduling. When they saw that $335 million guarantee, they kind of scoffed at me and said, we're not going to do that, as a casino, because they're going to be the ones that are going to have to put up $1 million. But what we did earlier this year is we ran $200 tournaments with a $500,000 guarantee and made a $750,000 prize pool. So, they got a little more confident after that. There's a lot of work that goes into it. I've been working very hard on this tournament. I was tournament director of the World Series in 2002, 3, and 4, but I've never worked harder than I have to set up this LAPC this year.
Well, I noticed that. I also noticed that you're playing a number of tournaments yourself.
I've been doing all right, actually. This last year, I made a World Series final table, cashed in two events at the World Series, and, just won another tournament last week. But, I like to play, but when I have a chance to, I'm always able to do well, which is good.
Are you allowed to sit down at Commerce?
Yeah, I can play at the cash games of Commerce. I'm not allowed to play in the tournaments, but, of course, I'm running them, so I wouldn't want to be a part of that anyway.
How often have you called the floor?
Yeah, not very often. How
do you diplomatically handle some of these players that get a little bit inebriated or get a little bit over the top or start ridiculing other players or, even worse yet, ridiculing a dealer?
Well, let's go right to the top. You know, Scotty Wynn and I have a past together as far as, you know, tournament and director and player, and also as friends. He's a guy that, you know, they just let get out of control. He's a great guy. You know, we all love Scotty away from the table. He's, you know, very good, does a lot of charity work and things that are good for poker. But at the table, when he represents himself in a manner like that, it's not only disrespectful to the game, but it's disrespectful to the other players and the floor staff. So I think that those guys that are running these other tournaments need to step up and cut them off at a reasonable time and make sure that that disrespect doesn't happen. It's just one of those things that I never allow in my tournaments, and I just don't think it's the right thing to do. Once you start abusing the other employees, the dealers and staff, it just gets out of control, and then everybody else feels like they can act the same way, and the next thing you know, you have chaos.
Matt, is it different in a cash game? Because I've been at, you know, I've sat down at many live games in my years, and quite often there's some guy at the table who's just a jerk. I mean, he's loud, he's obnoxious, he's analyzing every hand out loud. Maybe he's drinking, maybe he's just a jerk without the alcohol in him. Maybe he's making rude comments about the players or the dealers. Frankly, I don't mind that guy sitting at that table as long as he's losing. If you're the floor supervisor or the person who has to make decisions about that because you get called over by a dealer or you hear something like that going on, do you balance the needs of decorum versus how much the guy is helping that table out for the other players?
Well, quite often, yeah, like you say, that player is the live one. So you want them at the table. But at the same time, as long as it doesn't cross that line of abusing, you know, the dealers or the other players, as long as he's not abusing those players, you know, verbally, you know, obviously physically or any way, then, you know, I really have no problem with it. A little bit of table talk is always okay, but once again, crosses that line, you definitely have to cut them off. And, you know, it's one of those things. I don't want to play at certain casinos because they allow players to get away with, you know, whatever they want to do, and it's just disruptive. So I'm not a big fan of that, but I think you can have both. I think you can have a little bit of the table talk and keep them under control as well.
Well, I actually played out the Commerce, it was last year one time. I played with a gentleman by the name of Jack Haley out there, a former basketball player on it. You probably know Jack.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody knows Jack.
Yeah, for sure.
The guy sat down at the table and started abusing the dealer, really, and nobody liked it. Jack came to her defense, started, you know, railing on this guy, got in a hand with him, heads up on it, got the guy's money. Guy threw it in there to the felt. Jack reached up. Look, and Jack's like 6'10", okay? Mm-hmm. So when he stands up, you know he's standing up.
Yeah.
Right? Reached over the pot, pushed it all to the dealer as a tip and said, you know, looked at the guy and said, bye-bye.
I heard about that, and he actually tells that story quite often. Yeah, he always tells us, you know, whenever, if he wins one of the tournaments, he's just going to give it all to the dealers and staff. So, you know, we're always calling for Jack anyway.
Yeah, very, very, very nice.
Yes.
Matt, what do you feel about players at the table? I know cell phone use is kind of become a tricky issue because, you know, players can't be on the phone when they're in a hand in most casinos. But with all the texting and tweeting that's going on now, particularly the enthusiasm for that by some of the big-name pros at the World Series last summer, what are your rules about that?
Yeah, basically, you know, Jack Eflin and I talked about that over the last year, and I have allowed cell phone use at the table. You can't talk on the phone, but you are allowed to text and tweet in between hands. And, you know, really for poker, it's been a big boost because, you know, it's one of those things. It's a social game, and the social media has been very helpful in growing the game. So, I mean, it has its good points and its bad, but as long as you're not doing it during the hand, we don't see a problem with it. And obviously, we're always keeping an eye out for anybody that may be, you know, texting somebody across the table. But I really don't see that as a real issue. I mean, it'd be easier to catch something like that than people think.
Well, you've been doing a ton of these tournaments and everything. You've had to see just about everything. Have you ever seen any oddball things, somebody trying to cheat, somebody trying to do something different, and then you catch them at it? Any stories like that? I've heard some wild ones, I know. without mentioning any particular names?
I mean, I don't want this coming across as sounding, you know, racist or in the wrong way, but obviously, you know, the language thing has been the biggest issue. We've had some Russian players that come in, and, you know, they're speaking different languages during the hand, and, you know, there's a lot of players out here that speak different languages. So, you know, that's been the toughest thing for me to control, you know, and as far as cheating, I don't think that they're doing that per se, but again, we got to keep it real tight and make sure that they're not speaking during the hand, because it could really create a real problem.
We had a Russian gentleman here in St. Louis one time that nobody cared that he was speaking Russian, because at the same time he was doing that, he was tipping the table over. So, yeah, he was escorted out of here. You remember him?
I do remember him. Again, we won't mention names. Yeah. All right, so the L.A. Poker Classic starts tomorrow, and it runs through the first week of March. It's got 51 events, an estimated $20 million prize pool, a lot of unique formats that Matt has brought to this, and with 4,000 people expected in one of those early events, you're talking about breaking attendance records. And poker is moving in that direction where attendance records keep dropping. Some of these circuit events are getting 1,500. The PCA is getting a couple thousand people there. It's nice to see that our sport's dying off, right, Matt?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, my big goal is to beat last year's number of 696. People say it's impossible, you know, with the economy the way it is. But we're doing everything we can to make it good and exciting out here. And I think that we're going to beat last year's number. I am excited about the future for poker here in Commerce and in the United States. Obviously, internationally, I'm really making a push to make it a more global game, and I think we're winning it over.
Have you been following some of the articles out there in California about the state legalizing gaming, legalizing poker? Some of the Indian tribes are getting behind that. Have you been following
that? Yeah, definitely.
Any of that?
And I, you know, I'd obviously would hope to be a part of that if it ever does become legal. I'm former California native and now living in Las Vegas. But, yeah, there's definitely a lot of talk of that going on right now. There would be intrastate. And, you know, I think that would actually be a big boost for poker. There's a lot of people that think it would be bad for poker, that it would be overtaxed and regulated. But at the same time, I think it would bring a lot of new players into the game.
I agree. All right, last question for you, Matt. Tell us a story about appearing in the movie Lucky You, the poker movie, with Drew Barrymore and Eric Bana.
And Robert Duvall. Well, I'll tell a little story about Robert Duvall. Basically, I was standing there at my spot, where I'm supposed to be, and, you know, it was a long day, 14, 16-hour days, and the cameraman said to me, and the director stopped, said cut, and basically told me that I was standing in the wrong spot. So I said, sorry, I am standing in the right spot. He goes, no, you need to stand in your spot. So I looked down. I was directly on the spot I was supposed to be. I looked to the right, and there was Robert Duvall, and I said, Curtis, because Curtis Hanson directed the movie, said Robert Duvall's not in his spot. Well, that was the wrong thing to say. Basically, he looked at me and said, son, I'm always on my spot. So, you know, I stood there, and there was 100 different people in the room, and they was silent, and I just felt the sweat dripping off my forehead.
Yeah. I'm guessing you moved after that.
Yeah, I did move. I moved.
Matt, it's a pleasure talking to you. Commerce is one of the great poker rooms in America, and not just for the food either. The poker is pretty good, and I know you're going to have a huge success here with the LAPC. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Take care, Matt. Make it out. Take care.
All right.
Matt Savage, tournament director of the LA Poker Classic and Commerce Casino, and also Bay 101 in San Jose. Thanks for joining us here at the Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. Also, our podcast available on thechipleader.com. This portion of the show is brought to you by PokerStars.net, the website where you can play against Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips.
And a lot of other Team PokerStars pros. If you look at it, it's the kind of the site of the champions. You've got Daniel, of course, on there, but you've got Chris Moneymaker, you've got Greg Raymer, you've got Peter Eastgate, you now have Joe Cotta on there. And I'm telling you, if you want to go on there, learn the game, learn how to play it, then go forward to maybe two, Bay 101, or go out to the Commerce, or go out to this other. Lots of things happening. PokerStars just announced that NAPT, the North America Poker Tournament, that's going to be at the Venetian here in the middle of February. I will be out at that, and so will all the guys that I named out there on it. Go on site, go on to the free rolls. You can qualify and go to the Venetian and play without spending a dime. That's amazing. So, anyhow, I'd love to see you guys out there. Go to PokerStars.net, and we'll see you then.
All right. This is the Final Table. We'll be right back with the poker coach, Joe McGowan, with a segment on letting go of a big hand. I'm Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips at the Final Table, live from Harris St. Louis Poker Room on 590 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. We are in the Harris St. Louis Poker Room for the Final Table, here where the bad beat got hit on Saturday night for over $400,000. And now the backup bad beat jackpot is over $250,000. And there are people in here playing 1, 2, and 3, 6, trying to get in on that. There aren't any tournaments going on here for the next 2 days while they rewire the tables here for comps, where you can actually check in at the table very easily, as many other casinos around the country have started doing. They're also getting ready for the big circuit event that's coming to Harris St. Louis in April. April 1st is when the satellites will begin, and the first tournament will be on Friday, April 2nd, and they will go on for 2 weeks with small buy-in events and bigger buy-in events from $200 to $300 to $500, $1,000, $1,500, and the championship event, a three-day event on Tuesday, April 13th. That is a World Series of Poker circuit event. Not only will you get a ring, you don't get a bracelet on the circuit, you get a ring if you win the thing, as well as the prize money, but I believe you also get a buy-in to the main event this summer at the World Series of Poker.
Yeah, I believe you do. They're going to actually revamp the outside of the room here. They're putting in another, 60 tables or something like that on it. I've talked to a number of people down at the PCA. I'm not for sure who all's coming, but I guarantee there will be several pros showing up at this event.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be pretty massive.
And if you play other things besides No Limit Hold'em, they're going to have Limit Hold'em and Pot Limit High-Low. They're going to have Pot Limit Omaha and Horse and Six-Handed No Limit, which is very, very popular online.
Oh, yes.
They'll have one of those events going on. This is a huge deal, the World Series of Poker circuit event coming to St. Louis for the first time at Harris St. Louis, beginning on April 1st, and it's no April Fool's joke. I'm actually going tomorrow to Tunica, Mississippi, to play in their World Series of Poker circuit event, which gets underway tomorrow. So I'll report on that for you next week. Now let's bring Joe McGowan back in. He is the poker coach who has a segment today on letting go of a big hand. What's our lesson, Joe?
Well, Paul, this is something we've talked a little bit about before on the show, and I've talked to Dennis a bunch about this before. When you watch poker, you're in a hand, it's a whole lot different when you're at the table and you're not in the hand and you get to watch other players. It's a lot easier to see some things coming. Sometimes you see the train wreck coming. Sometimes you say to yourself, geez, how could that guy call there? That was a horrible call or that was a horrible play. When you're in the seat and you are in the hand and you're playing it, it is a lot tougher. And I think what happens to a lot of players, I've seen this, I can't tell you how many times, and I've really been paying attention to it the last couple years since I really started noticing it. Sometimes you'll have something like, say, the 6-7 of diamonds, you're in the small blind, a bunch of people limp, playing a cash game, and the big blind just checks. So you're in there, and you flop a flush, okay? Something that's well over 100-1 in odds, pretty exciting. I mean, wow, you just flopped a flush. Or, you know, you have that same type of hand, or you have 5-7 offsuit, and you flop a straight. Wow, that's pretty exciting, pretty rare. You're thinking, how am I going to maximize? How am I going to get the most amount of chips out of this? Very, very exciting. But many, many times, that big hand that you have turns into now a marginal hand at best, because by the time the river comes, you end up with just a 7-high flush. And there's now 4 to the flush on the board. There's 4 diamonds on the board. So any one single diamond, of course, has you beat that's bigger. Or you get counterfeited in the straight, and now just one of your straight cards play. But now there's a bigger straight out there with your card and another card, or sometimes even 2 other cards. If you have 5-7, maybe it's a 9-10 now would be the nut straight. Your 7 still plays, but the 5 is gone. I have seen guys, and I'm kind of maybe asking you this as well if you think about it, I have seen so many times where a player gets emotionally attached to this hand. They pay way too much for it by the time the river comes. They know that they're beat, but they'll typically say something like, you know, I can't let this go. I flopped it. You know, I flopped it, they'll say, and they'll call. And it's just a horrible, horrible spot to be in. The emotions of having to let that hand go that was once a huge hand, and it's going to cost you by the river. But I'll tell you, it's unbelievable to me. It's so rare that it happens, but when it happens, it's extremely common that people cannot let these hands go. And I think what you need to do is you need to ask yourself, you know, where am I now? And forget that you flopped it, or really even how much is in the pot. If you're getting an unbelievable price and you think there's an outside chance the guys on the bluff, sure, make the call. But typically in that spot, you know, by the river, and you flop the flush, you're beat. You've got to let that hand go and detach from it and not be emotional that you flop such a big hand and go with it. And I just see it over and over and over again.
Yeah, and actually,
you guys
it's one
see
of the...
that as well?
I agree with you 100% on it. In fact, it's one of the toughest things for anybody to do is to get away from that hand. When you flop top set and you think you're great, and maybe you flop two clubs out there and the third club comes and the guy sitting across from me all of a sudden check raises you and the whole bit, and you're sitting there, but I got a top set. How can I possibly lay this down?
Even worse is when there's a hidden straight on the board. The flop comes king, 8-6. And you've got a set of kings. And you're betting it, you're betting it, and then the turn card is a 4. And you don't even think to yourself, oh, he's got to have 5-7 here. He was obviously playing the open-ended straight. And you're getting your money in there, and you're thinking, but I flopped a set of kings. How can I lose with a set of kings? Oh, I know you have me beat, but I can't lay down my set of kings. And I can't tell you how many times I've said, everybody I know has said, and I've heard so many other players say, okay, I know you got me beat, but I got to put the money in there. And that
right.
money goes
exactly
into that pot,
right,
too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it
that,
is.
That's exactly what you hear. And, you know, it's such a high percentage. I mean, it's in the 90s when you hear that. If you pay attention, whether it's you or anyone else that's doing it, it's in the 90% range that you are beat. You know, I'll pay you off. You know, I don't like it. Oh, I flopped it. You know, that type of talk. And, you know, yours is even tougher, you know, where it's a hidden straight and he may not have it. It's not very likely that he'll have that. He could have that. But with my way, you know, you just have like a 7-high flush, and it's extremely probable that the other guy has a bigger diamond.
Yeah.
And
yep.
people still have a tough time letting that go. I know that I have a tough time letting it go, even that I'm aware of this, you know, and well, I'm talking about it on today's show. When you flop that flush, it's such a big hand. It's so much harder to let that thing go because, man, I flopped it. I thought I was going to get paid. Like, I was calculating how I'd get the most money out of this. I flopped the nut straight. It's so rare. I waited a week to flop a hand like that. And now I got to let it go? I don't want to let it go.
But
you have to. If you're beat,
Joe,
you're beat. And if it's painfully obvious you're beat, you know, it may sound easy to a lot of players. And that's why I was a little worried about this segment. It may sound easy. Well, of course you let it go. But when you're in the seat, there's an extremely high percentage of players that won't let that hand go, and that's pretty much the lesson, you know, for me today. You really need to evaluate where you are, detach that you flopped it, get rid of the emotions, figure out where you are in the hand at that spot, make a good decision, and if you know you're beat, you got to let it go.
But, Joe, I got to tell you that you are going to be responsible for people not letting it go. You know why? 3 weeks ago on this show, you talked about players counting their outs and looking for the possibility of that extra flush card coming and using that as a bluff out. And somebody seeing the opportunities like that, okay, the fourth diamond comes. Now I'm going to represent that I've got the bigger flush, and we're going to have players who are not going to let it go because of you, Joe, because you told people, A, you want to be the aggressor who does that, but now you also got to watch out for that sort of thing. And another part of that is the psychology of poker players not wanting to be bluffed. I mean, there's an ego thing that goes on with that. Sometimes you say to yourself, you know what, I'll just kill myself if I lay this down and he shows me the bluff when I know that I had the second nuts or the third nuts or you know, middle nuts on this sort of board. And they just don't want to be bluffed out of that pot, and so they make that call. And then, of course, they get called by the nuts, the stone cold nuts, and they're cursing themselves. But it's a two-way street.
Absolutely.
It is.
Dennis, you brought up a huge point with the top set. I mean, I didn't even think of that one, which, of course, I should have. How tough is that? Yeah, you both brought really, really good points, you know, with this scenario
well,
that I'm trying to go over.
Some of them are a little easy. They're still tough to throw away. When you flop the flush and then the fourth diamond comes out there, you know, you've got to be realistic to yourself and think, you know, anything over it beats it type stuff.
Yep.
I had a hand out there actually in the tournament where I had a 7-8 suited, flopped a king 7-8. The guy made it what could have been a continuation bet. He'd raised preflop, and I'd called him with a 7-8. I had two guys behind me. I just smooth called, which obviously was a mistake in hindsight on this, but I was trying to build a pot because I knew this guy was going to throw chips in. The two guys behind me both called. Turn card's a second king. I'm guaranteeing one of the three's got a king.
Yeah.
I am history.
Yep.
It's easy to get away from it, and you sit there and go, and you kick yourself. Why didn't I re-raise? Why didn't I isolate with the original guy who may not have the king? Of course you didn't, you know. But that one you can get away from. The other one that you didn't mention that is so hard to get away from is when you have those pocket aces, and you have the danger, right, and you have a three-card or a four-card straight, or you have whatever.
Yeah.
And I've seen so many people that just, for whatever reason, can't seem to throw pocket aces away.
Yep.
Right.
And
they
can
so
be beat.
Right,
they can be so easily beat by the time it gets to a turn or a river on that. So,
right.
But no, Joe brings up a valid point here. You have to realistically look at your hand and look at it on each segment of it, not just the flop, but also the turn, also the river, how they've been playing it, the whole bit. You know, flopping a flush is so fantastic. I love the way you said that. I've been waiting for a month for this.
It's true, though. That's how you feel.
It is. It's absolutely 100% true.
All right. That,
but you've got to get rid of them.
That's great stuff from the poker coach, Joe McGowan, here at the Final Table. By the way, if you don't have our podcast, you can download them at thechipleader.com. We're coming up on the one-year anniversary of this show, so if you're just learning about us and just starting to listen to the podcast or our live broadcasts on KFNS, you can listen to all of the shows we've done over the past year on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. Now, let's just talk for a moment here about the Poker Players Alliance, one of our sponsors.
Absolutely.
We're happy to sponsor them and be members of the PPA.
Uh-huh.
And you can become a member also by going to thePPA.org. A couple of interesting things on the legal front when it comes to poker. There's been a bill introduced in the New Jersey legislature. Now, New Jersey already was one of the first states with legalized gambling in Atlantic City.
Correct.
Now, a legislator there, Raymond Lesniak, has introduced legislation that would legalize online gambling, not just poker, but roulette, blackjack, and craps, and all the rest, legalize it in New Jersey. We talked earlier with Matt Savage about some Indian tribes in California.
Correct.
Trying to do this just inside California. How can they do this when we're still fighting the battle against the UIGEA, that ridiculous law that the PPA is trying to get knocked down?
Well, part of it is the UIGEA is more on banking regulations, and actually the flowing of the money and everything is where the regulations are at. When you go, say, in California out there, because of the unique status of the Indian casinos and their ability to basically regulate and govern themselves on this,
yep,
if they get the blessing of the state to conduct this, according to their attorneys, perfectly legal, and the federal government cannot step into it.
Well, it'd be very interesting because in New Jersey, we're not talking about Indian tribes.
That's
doing
the one
it.
that I question on this one.
Well, the way the law is written, it would have to be your servers and your offices for the internet gaming companies would have to be located in Atlantic County, which is where Atlantic City is located, in New Jersey, and everything would have to flow from there.
Yeah, I still question that somewhat because I still think the government, the federal government, would supersede that.
I do too.
And without some sort of an exception into it, such as they found in California.
Yep.
I'm not for sure how they can do that. I obviously I'm not an attorney.
Yep.
They think they can get it. That's great, but I really question that one.
If you want to find out more about issues like these, go to the website thePPA.org. thePPA.org. That's the Poker Players Alliance. You can find out, follow all of these legal battles that are going on for the game we all love, which, you know, regulate it, sure, tax it, sure, but the restrictions that are on it in some places, even on home games, are absolutely ridiculous. The Poker Players Alliance, we're happy to have them as a sponsor. We're happy to be members as well. We're back here for another edition of the Final Table 1 week from today. Dennis will actually be in town again.
That is true.
Joe will still be at the Poker Coach headquarters. I'm Paul Harris. Thank you for listening. Questions, email them to DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. And check out the website, thechipleader.com. This is 590 The Fan, KFNS.